From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, Brad Zwilling of the FBFM record-keeping program here in the state of Illinois will join us to take a look at farm family living expenses and how they've been changing over the last several years. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too, that with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, and we'll do it all here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, I'm told, as cold as it was here this morning, you were even colder there in Kansas. How cold did it get overnight?
It was about 8 to 9 below, Todd, and we were fortunate because we had a couple inches of snow, but it was even colder and less snowpack in the wheat belt west of us. So a greeting and a happy new year to you from the frigid Arctic tundra of eastern Kansas.
That'll make you shiver a little bit, and I think so will the soybeans from today. Many were kind of hoping that we'd have another up day in this marketplace. However, the first week of the new year did not end well, either on the daily or the weekly charts for soybeans, down 17.5 cents in the January, new crop November down 13.75. What can you tell me about it?
And the monthly charts made new monthly lows as well today. So we are on a very big red line right now. And as I said to my clients a couple weeks ago in a video, this is kind of a Custer line where it's a last stand technically for the soybeans. And it makes sense what we did today, unfortunately, because we saw another big, for a second week in a row, net reduction on the export sales of 33 million bushels. And so we have a weakening demand picture for a second week in a row, and that's taking the focus off of the weather issues. And those weather issues were already starting to wane a bit in terms of the past couple days. And what I mean by that, Todd, is Brazilian soybean production potential is coming online. It's firming up as Mato Grosso harvest is starting to resume, and it's getting warmer and drier in that northern province, which produces 35 to 40% of Brazil's bean production. And I think you have the potential now for not just increasing competitive supplies, but also decreasing export demand. And that's the way the trade saw it. And they took that new crop bean corn ratio down to a 2-month low as a result of that. And as I said, took us down in the meal market, especially to a very key monthly low. November new crop beans have a major support at the December 27th low of just over 980, and we're just right there. So I'm in the camp that we need to hedge going into next Thursday's crop report. If we take the technicals out early in the week, I will admit that Thursday's report is probably our best chance to change and reverse this, what's starting to be a very negative trend. Otherwise, I think the pathway to get us back above $10 November beans, let alone $11 November beans, those pathways are shrinking heading into the March 30th acreage report. So I'm ready and fully prepared to get some more paper positions on next week before Thursday's report, and I'll deal with a bullish rally and welcome it if I get it.
So essentially what you're telling me is we've been trading a weather market out of South America, and now it has ended.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, what you ask in terms of the question. The other thing I would say is what differentiates, and this is where the producer, I think, is well served by looking at a newsletter, looking at some analysis, and doing his own marketing again in 2017. I think it's very important to see that of the three major commodities, which one is holding a demand premium and which one has that built in. And I think it's clear that the beans have that demand premium built in, whereas corn, which is explosive in terms of export sales and export inspections year to date compared to USDA's forecast, is got next to no demand premium, especially in the aftermath of the hogs and pigs report, bigger supplies there, cattle on feed report, bigger supplies there, ethanol data, bigger demand and needed supplies there as well. So beans are a unique commodity right now. They have a demand premium in them that the trade may want to take out now that South America comes online.
The fundamentals behind that are two major supply sources and one real end user?
Yes, and I think also we have to remember that the Chinese currency, they have allowed to weaken to levels that are the weakest in 8 and almost 9 years up until this week. And that just, and this is against the U.S. dollar, and they also changed their basket of how they measure their currency and reduce their dollar exposure. So it makes them more likely to come in and find substitutes and to utilize our competition. And I think the conservative number, I feel comfortable right now going on the air and saying it's going to be hard to take the Brazilian bean production below 102 million tons at this stage of the game because Mato Grosso is in harvest and they didn't have really any problems in terms of flooding that maybe the market was worried about at the beginning of this week. So you do have roughly 220 million more bushels of production in Brazil coming online than you had last year. And we still have that icky number that we talked about way back in Alny and way back before that in our last commodity week about having a U.S. carryover double of what it was last year at this time for beans.
Yeah, so that was my next question. I was going to point to that 480 million bushel carryover. Farmers have gotten really used to that number being fairly large at this time of the year and then winnowing down to at least half of that size by the time we get to the end of the marketing year. That happened last year because of a weather problem in South America. Previous years, probably demand usage from China. Can they depend on either one of those this season?
I don't think so, and I think we have a new element that has to be introduced into your marketing plan, and I hope to goodness that I'm wrong on this, and that's why we call it hedging. But I think the key element that's different this year versus last year is you don't need to rebuild a Chinese hog herd like you did right when that South American crop was getting hurt by the weather last year. And you've got a new president that is putting in place some U.S. trade representatives and some other key figures in his cabinet that the Chinese simply don't like. And they've been writing articles almost daily in their official print publications, and the current U.S. ambassador has been called as of today saying, tell the new Trump administration that they can get flowers from us or they can get a big stick from us. And that's their words, not ours. And so I think you have to look at it from a late 1970s, early 1980s issue like we went through with the Soviet Union. If we do get into a mix-up with our biggest bean buyer and Brazil's biggest bean buyer, who's that going to hurt the most? Is it going to hurt the corn producer more or the bean producer more? And I think you need to introduce that as well.
Yeah, I suppose it just simply tells you you must be nimble, and that's what you've told us here is you're ready this week and things might change next week.
And it's all about profit. You know, we still don't have profit in the corn. And as I said, we are running 80% ahead in export inspections year to date in corn. The USDA has had a true statistical bias of building supply and keeping demand down. If anything surprising comes in on Thursday of next week, I've got to think that they'll change that bias and look at more demand. Even if they don't lower the yield like I think they should, I think they could put 250 million more bushels of corn demand on the books without blinking an eye.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in 1 week.
Nice to be back with you, sir.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt won't gut the renewable fuel standard if he is confirmed as EPA administrator. This according to Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Mr. Pruitt, she says, told me in a meeting that the role of the EPA is to enforce the law as written by Congress and not undermine the RFS. The Iowa Republican made this statement following a meeting Thursday between Pruitt and a bunch of Corn Belt Republican senators. They included Ernst, Chuck Grassley, also from Iowa, John Thune, Mike Rounds, Deb Fisher, Ben Sasse, and Pat Roberts. Pruitt's nomination has had ethanol backers worried because of his past opposition to the program, but Ernst and Grassley both offered encouraging words after the meeting, which was held in preparation for Pruitt's confirmation hearing before the Environment and Public Works Committee, a date for which has yet to be set. Well, let's stay with ethanol for a moment. Growth Energy says U.S. drivers have reached 500 million miles on E15 fuels. In a statement this week, Growth Energy said the figure was based on sales and consumption data reported over the past 12 months by gasoline retailers. The organization says the milestone highlights the fuel's performance, safety, and value for American consumers. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score says drivers are finding out that E15, which contains 15% ethanol, is an even better choice for their wallets, their engines, and the environment. E15 works for any vehicle, 2001 and newer, and is the most tested fuel to date. Well, Bruce Rastetter, an Iowa agribusiness leader and Republican mega donor, is calling on the incoming Trump administration to block pending mergers among chemical and seed giants. The billion-dollar deals between Bayer Ag and Monsanto, DuPont and Dow Chemical, and China's National Chemical Corporation, ChemChina and Syngenta, will limit competition, raise costs for farmers, and stunt job growth, Rastetter said in an interview Thursday. These mergers, he said, would accomplish the opposite of what President-elect Donald Trump campaigned on, greater opportunity in America. If they are approved, he thinks, it could cause irreversible damage for farmers. Rastetter, a member of Trump's Agricultural Advisory Committee, attributes the wave of consolidation in the industry to the U.S. government's long and costly approval process for new biotech products and patent licensing laws. For example, companies spend millions developing a new seed trait or chemical and then face an uncertain timeline for getting a green light from U.S. regulators, which eats into potential profits and complicates corporate R&D decision-making. Well, Smithfield Foods, the largest pork producer in the world, valued at some $14 billion, said this week it has moved 87% of its pregnant sows to group housing and is on track to reach 100% by the end of the year. If the company follows through, it would complete a 10-year plan announced in 2007 to get rid of gestation crates. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, stay with us here on Illinois Public Media if you can. Coming up in the second half hour on many of these radio stations over the weekend, on others, you can hear Commodity Week or just go online right now to willag.org. Our panelists this week included Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and from Waco, Texas, Dan Zwicker. It was a great program. Stay with us if you can. Find it online, if not, at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Brad Zwilling. He's a farm business analyst in the Illinois FBFM, or Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping Service. Thanks for being with us. You're hosted right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus in Mumford Hall.
That's correct, Todd. We're up on the fourth floor of Mumford. That's where our state office is.
You've written an article, along with a few other folks, about family living expenses. Tell me about it and what it means over time.
Yeah. Well, we're looking at the 2015 family living specifically and looking at a trend over time. For 2015, we had about 1,400 farms in our Illinois FBFM group that were complete records showing everything in and out of the farm operation as well as family living. When looking at that, we're looking at about $85,000 per year. For family living, that includes medical contributions, life insurance. It does not include income taxes. So that figures out to about $7,000 a month. If we throw in income taxes, that's been about $32,000 in 2015. So it's at least family living has gone down about 4%, because that's something we've been talking to our clients to make sure that they're decreasing that. That's one thing that we can help with. And then income taxes came down 16% because we've seen decline in incomes from the farm, and that's primarily where that income tax is being driven from.
So they're dropping back pretty substantially from where they were. Are they as far back as they were in the early 2000s?
We're dropping down. The high of our family living was in 2013. We were about almost $90,000. So we've dropped down $5,000 over the last 3 years. So if you look on a per acre basis, we were at $109 per acre in 2015. It was $82 back in 2006. So it's about a 33% increase from 2006 up, but in the last 3 years we've started declining a little bit.
It sounds to me as if potentially the FBFM records have quite a few of their the people that are in those records that must own quite a bit of property. as well. Is that right?
It varies. Because we, like I said, we're taking a large segment of about 1,400 farms, so it varies on how much they own. We're looking at, and when we talk about per acre, we're looking at acres that they get full share income from. So there's some crop share income in there. We're looking on average, those are around probably $700 or $800, or 700 or 800 acres would be about the average acres we're talking about. So some smaller farms in that sort that actually do everything in and out of the operation.
So $85,000, is that the salary, roughly speaking, if you would were to think of it that, and then you've got another $32,000 of taxes, so they're in that $50,000 range.
Yeah, for... if we didn't have any income, if we didn't have any income off the farm, it would be $85,000 that the farm would have to generate to pay for all the family living. Yes, that's correct. It'd be about a salary off the farm.
So. Okay, so as we move forward, they've been shrinking up. $5,000 over the last 3 years or so. What are the expectations for 2017?
We think that's going to increase. One other thing that we've been seeing is the off-farm income has been increasing, so we think there's going to be more off-farm income. We were at about $41,000 off the farm, and we think that's going to increase. That was the highest in any of our years of study, is that $41,000. So we think that's going to increase. We're going to cut back on more expendables onto the in the family that we can. Medical cost has gone up. We think that's going to maybe steady out a little bit. But, you know, as we look at that, it's hard to tell what next year is going to be. But we think over the last 3 years, you know, we've been starting that decrease. We think they'll probably be down another 5 to 10%, we hope. So,
What's the bottom line here?
And the bottom line is when you look at this, we need to make sure that we think about how this impacts our budgets we're looking at. So if we're looking at 200 bushel corn, we're looking at that $109 an acre. If we calculate on a cent basis, that's about 55 cents. Per dollar that we'd sell that corn for. So if you're budgeting 200 bushel corn, we need to think about that. Think about 55 cents for every bushel is going to have to go to family living. On top of that, we're going to have another 21 cents would be for income taxes. So you're looking at about a 76 cent per bushel is going to go to family living and taxes.
So when you look forward into 2017, that's really the number you're thinking about. If I'm thinking on a per bushel, what will I have to have? 76 cents at a minimum in... And you put that right in your cost?
Yeah, that would be it. I think by the time you go through all your direct inputs and your variable costs, you still got to have that much left even to break even on a family living basis, yes.
Tough job to do.
It is. That's why we're crunching numbers and help out in these lower income and price times.
What does FBFM do?
We work with about 5,600 farmers across the state with record keeping and helping with making decision making for our management of the farm incomes for our farmers.
It's part of a larger organization?
We also have a national organization, the National Association of Farm Business Analyst Specialists across the U.S. And we have clients for over many, or clients, we have many other organizations across the 50 states.
And so in Illinois, if they want to, a farmer wants to enroll or check out FBFM, how do they do that?
Easiest way to do that is to go to our website, www.fbfm.org, and there's a place who to contact there, and you have phone numbers and information where all our offices are across the state. We have over 60 field staff in the state of Illinois.
Thank you so much, Brad.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Brad Zwilling is a farm management specialist with the Illinois FBFM. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon, the 6th day of January. Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible. He's traveling at the Potato Expo. Hey, thanks, Eric. Let's start out west and then work our way eastward across the United States. Quite a bit of weather, I take it, to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you this. The jet stream in the Pacific has been exceptionally active. And honestly, that's what you want, to have a really active weather pattern all the way across the United States. Although it's kind of ironic, this morning when I was on the plane real early in San Francisco, they actually had to de-ice the plane, something that happens very, very rarely in that part of the country. But basically, we got what we call the Pineapple Express, and that's basically strong winds in the jet stream set up just taking aim on the West Coast. We're expecting lots and lots and lots of snow. And why I want to talk about this is because if California gets a lot of snow in the Sierra Nevadas, it sets them up to have a really good water year. In other words, when that water melts later on in the year and then fills their reservoirs, their lakes and streams, they're going to have that water for irrigation. And remember, California produces, is the nation's top producer in over 40 different fruits and vegetables. So we got to keep an eye out on that. As you move across the U.S., once we get over the Rockies, one thing I'm getting concerned about is that there is some drier conditions, some drought conditions, albeit the lower stages of drought that are developing across the Central Plains. This may have an impact on wheat as we get into the next spring. And if it continues to develop, we got to watch it for maybe potentially impacting the 2017 crop. But, you know, that's just something I'm monitoring. I don't want to raise alarm, just something I want to look at. You know, the thing, though, that is raising alarms right now is what is going on in the southern, southeastern part of the United States. There's a low-pressure center sitting right off of the Florida Panhandle, just to the south of it, and it's got enough moisture to work with, plus all this cold air that's locked into place right now, to be producing some pretty icy and snowy conditions, especially from Atlanta to the north and east. So places like in South Carolina and North Carolina, there might be some spots that are getting over a foot of snow. And a lot of snow in the southeast spells troubles often. So it's going to be an interesting case to watch then over the next 24 hours.
It covers the United States, a good portion of North America. How about South America?
Yeah, well, just like the active pattern we've been having in the United States, where, in fact, even after this cold weather we're going to get this week, kind of alleviates next week, South America has had a pretty active monsoon season as well. And honestly, they've been getting rains in Argentina. The Brazilian crop is looking good. And so as we've been talking about now for a couple of months, South America, because the rain is coming in, La Nina's weak, we're not seeing a whole lot of adversity in the crop just yet. Got to watch it for the next couple of months, but this is at least pointing toward a good growing season down there.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Good luck on your flights and getting back here if that's where you're headed. I don't know whether you're headed out to the Potato Expo or are you coming back?
I'm coming back. I'll be in Bloomington in about 3 hours, so that's good news.
Excellent deal. Thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.